Welcome to the Rish Outcast, everyone. You're having a good time tonight. How many of you from out of town? Don't answer that. I don't really care. Everybody needs chalupas. Get your mouth around them now. I'm the one that has chalupas. Trust in this, my solemn vow. Chalupas, oh yeah. You get my chalupas. You get them all year. Oh, you get them right here in my pants. Chalupas. If you want chalupas, if you're hungry by chance, give me a good glance in this circumstance. I'm sure we can come to an understanding that ends with digestive tracts expanding. You'll find them altogether undemanding for the kinds of meals I am commanding. Our deal leaves both parties in good standing, and you'll announce it was outstanding. Chalupas. I got your chalupas. That's all of the song. Don't get me wrong. I would love to stay. Chalupas. There are no chalupas. They've all gone away. They went out the door. I don't got no more, so that's all I gotta say. Wow. Wow, that worked so well in my head. Oh, man. I wanted to ring in 2019 in some kind of special manner. Boy, you guys have no idea how good that sounded in my head. No idea. Well, maybe you have some idea. So, as I said, Rish Outcast. This is Rish Outfield. And honestly, yeah, this is the first episode I'm recording in 2019. It's a new year. I had several episodes backlogged, several episodes edited or about to be edited. There's still a couple more 2018 episodes I haven't edited, but it's a new year. And a new year presents you with all sorts of possibilities of, you know, things that might happen, things that could happen, things that probably won't happen. But it's still kind of a neat holiday. It's one of those that I don't feel has been ruined by commercialism. I mean, yeah, sure, they sell booze and they sell those popping things and they sell party favors and funny hats and this town needs an enema things. But I don't feel like it has been ruined in the way that, you know, two or three bigger holidays have been. Well, has Halloween been ruined? I guess if you hate Halloween, I can see being like, oh no, it's September 1st and people are putting up Halloween costumes. You know what I'm talking about. It's Christmas. Christmas is the villain here. And that's long gone. Super long gone for you. Well, maybe not. Maybe Christmas is right around the corner. That's how behind I am on the Rish Outcast. But speaking of that, yeah, I wanted to do something. I wanted to start podcasting again. So on my Patreon page, I put a poll up. It's a lot of peas. I asked, in 2019, would you folks like to see more single episode story presentations or multi-episode story presentations of longer stories or rambling conversation episodes? And I was really disappointed that there wasn't a clear winner. There were people that liked the conversation episodes. That surprises the hell out of me. When I first started this show, I don't know if you remember, but I apologized the first time that there wasn't a story. I'll try not to let it happen again, folks. And I think in 2018, it was split pretty evenly. I'd say about 48 to 52% of the episodes were story episodes, and, you know, vice versa for the other. I think that that works pretty well. But, I have a lot of stories that I don't share, that I haven't shared, and it's good to do that. I like it when people dig the stories that I share. And, you know, there's always stuff out there that maybe if I put it up for sale, somebody would buy it. That hasn't really been the case in my experience, but you know what I'm saying? Maybe. So, just a second. We're at the point where if I go straight, I will hit the grocery store that's just right here in the neighborhood. But if I turn left, there's one that's a couple more miles down the road. Probably 4 miles, maybe 5 miles. And I'm trying to decide which one to go to. I think I'm going to go to the far one so that you and I can talk, so we do the podcast. Otherwise, in a minute and a half, I'll have to turn this off and go into the grocery store. See what I do for you? What was I saying? Oh, but I want to do more stories. I've said this before. You know what? If you've heard every episode of The Rish Outcast, just skip forward 1 minute so that you don't have to hear this part
again.
But I write these stories for me. I learned early on not to share my work with my mom and my dad. You know, I could never please my father, ever. We've talked about that. And with my mom, I know that she is very tolerant and enabling of me. And I wonder how much criticism she's gotten of that, that, you know, oh, you're no good son. Still thinks he's going to be a writer, huh? Kind of thing. Or an actor, or, you know, whatever stupid artistic aspirations that I had. Your no good son thinks that he can write a big band, sort of a Frank Sinatra theme song about chalupas. Oh, geez. How shameful must it be you? So these stories that I write tend to be for myself. Okay, that's not quite true. I was going to say, I never had the experience of sharing one of my stories with a girl and having her eyes go big and say, wow, you were fairly unattractive and then you wrote this thing and now you're slightly less so. That did actually happen one time. And then there was the girl in college that I talked about on the episode where I first went to the lake. The Big Release, I think that one was called. And she acted like she was interested in me, and then when I went over to her house and we had the opportunity to be interested in one another, she kept talking about her boyfriend, and I was like, oh, okay, well, I can take a hint. Me no dummy. But apparently she really, really found my writing good. And she seemed to have been amenable to some kind of dating relationship if I had only gone for it. And, you know, hindsight is, I got pretty good vision. And, you know, once she was already in a relationship with some other dude and we were going our separate ways, I guess it becomes easy to say, you know, I might have let you touch my hair if you had asked. I don't know about relationships. You know, it's Valentine's Day right now. It's not Valentine's Day today, but it's the week before Valentine's Day, and, you know, there's a lot of commercials, and there are 2 or 3 full aisles of Valentine's Day shite at Walmart. You can't help but think about romance, think about relationships. You know, if I watched more TV, I'm sure I would see, like, the Jared Diamonds commercials and stuff that air around this time. They air a lot during the holidays as well, but again, you know, everybody around you is eating ice cream and you can't help but think about, wow, ice cream. What flavor of ice cream would I eat right now if I had ice cream? You know, that sort of stuff. How did I get into this? Okay, I was talking about the girl in college that called me Oscar Wilde. Oh, yes, thank you. Not entirely senile mind. I was talking about that I write stories for myself. But it's not good to just write for yourself. You need to share your work. You need to get suggestions. You need to get constructive criticism stuff. I'm not going to get any better if I just keep writing them in my notebook and not sharing them with anybody. And I'm certainly not going to make any money from them. You know, I had a friend
that I've talked about a lot that really wanted to be a writer. And I think he told me he has not written in, oh boy, I want to say he said 8 years. But he still wants to be a writer. And I think about myself. And it's like, what do I want to be? A writer. When did I last write? Well, I mean, today is not a good example because I wrote today. But I need to start doing that thing where I write every day. Okay, I got this story done. Now I need to start on this other story. And oh, you know what? I had this idea and I never wrote it. And I'm going to write that next. That stuff is cool. I am always inspired, impressed, incensed when I see these other writers on Facebook or these other writers that have podcasts that write every single day, that produce something and share something every single week. These people, they're doing it. They're making it happen. They're bringing home the bacon, stirring it up in a pan. I can do better. I need to do better. And because I hadn't done any episodes in the new year, I felt like, well, I want to share something for my first episode, something special. And I couldn't think of what it could be. And so I was just looking through the stories that I have out there that people can read, but I didn't have audio of. And I saw that True Ghost Encounter is one of those. That was one we were going to do on the Doonstief, and it never happened. And to me, it's kind of a sticking point between me and Big Anklevich. I just, you know, we don't agree on everything. The partnership that we have with that podcast, it's kind of like a marriage, right? You can't have one person that is in charge of the marriage and then somebody else that is just like goes along for the ride. Or maybe you can, but I don't know. I feel like a relationship is a give and take, and some compromises have to be made on both sides, and you want to be happy, and happiness probably requires a little bit of sacrifice and a little bit of compromise and open-mindedness. True Ghost Encounter is a story that I wrote with the Doonstief in mind and with a collection in mind. I don't know if you remember, there was an episode I did, I think it was one of those lost episodes that I just didn't run for years because nothing had come of it. And that episode was called
What a Stupid Concept.
Wow, did you see how naturally that was spliced in there? In that episode, I talked about the origin of True Ghost Encounter. And at that point, I had not shared it with anybody, not even Big Anklevich. But I'm sharing it with you now. I've decided to run it, and it was going to be the first installment in the Dead and Breakfast series. It was going to be an open world for other writers to write in if they wanted to. Almost like a Broken Mirror kind of thing, but with the intention of putting out an anthology. A collection of stories that other people wrote set in this world that I had invented. When I say world, I guess set in this locale, this, you know, premise. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you don't have to go back and listen to that old episode. You don't have to listen to the That Gets My Goat episode that Big and I did about it years ago. I'll probably say a lot of the stuff again after the story, and you can be all caught up that way. But if you want to go back, you can listen to that as well. I mean, you can always go back and listen to old episodes. I hope that there are none that are so topical that they become irrelevant when enough time has passed. So, okay, enjoy, if you can, True Ghost Encounter.
True Ghost Encounter by Rish Outfield. Judson Cavella had a thing for ghosts. He had always been fascinated by the idea of hauntings, of ghostly visitors, of places where the door to the other side was thin, He had a job, and sometimes had a girlfriend. But what he liked to do with his spare time was interview people about their ghostly experiences. Sometimes on the phone, in person if possible. Lately, he had been a contributor for True Ghost Encounters, a website for just that sort of thing. He would do his interview, do a little write-up, and post the page on the web, where he got a bit of ad revenue, as well as whatever the webmaster would pay him, usually $20 an article. Chicken feed, but better than nothing. It wasn't that he was a believer. He never tired of talking to people about supernatural occurrences, enjoyed listening to testimonials, as long as they weren't of the "this happened to my friend's friend" variety, and had not closed his mind to the possibility that the afterlife was real, and often crossed over with our own plane. He'd even seen a spectral form moving across the ceiling of his college dorm late at night. Though, cards on the table, he only saw it for a moment. No one else had witnessed it, and he had come back from a party earlier that evening. Yeah, one of those parties. And he never saw anything like that again. He had an open mind, and more importantly, he believed that the people who told their haunted house stories to him actually believed in ghosts. So, you never knew. He often got emails, both from doubters and the true believers. But one day, he got an email that would change everything. It was from a fan, someone who liked what Judson did and had sent him contact information for people who had stories to tell in the past. This time, though, there was a link to a YouTube video and a single sentence, "Check this out?" So he did. The title of the video was "Haunted Idaho Bed and Breakfast." It had been posted in the past 24 hours. It only had 300 views, but that was pretty good for a single day. A woman was being taped, or was taping herself, and didn't look into the camera, but right to the side of it. For some reason, that made it feel more like a professional interview. The sound wasn't great, though. The lighting pretty harsh and unforgiving, and the woman didn't look like an actress. That is, she was in her 40s, maybe a tad heavier than even a Hollywood day player could get away with, and hadn't done her hair. It was brushed into a hasty bun, but errant strands kept getting in her face, and she wiped them away throughout.
"Well, it's a personal story, yes," the woman began, "but I thought it might help other people, people who have lost people close to them. If it helps somebody else, then I guess it's worth putting out there. I'll try to get through it in one sitting, but I have my Kleenex box right here, just in case."
She gestured just outside the camera frame. There were 111 likes and only 2 dislikes. As the woman, who was uncredited, though the username of the account was Midwest Traveler, with 2 L's, told her tale, Judson scrolled down to see the user comments, a habit he couldn't seem to shake, and read the first one. "Is this for a movie?" No question mark. The second comment read, "Drink every time she says well." He scrolled back up and watched the lady tell her tale.
"So there's a bed and breakfast in Idaho, and it's a magical place. The kind of, well..."
She shook her head.
"No, not magical. Special. It's a special place. Although I guess it'll sound a bit like magic to you. To me, too."
She smiled, but it was all too brief.
"Well, it's on Locust Lane in the town of Vernon. We stayed for the 4th of July holiday, but it was on the 3rd that, well, the incident happened. I had been, well, not sleeping, but sort of dozing off, and there, well... there was a knock at the door."
Midwest Traveler inhaled slowly through her nose and let it out her mouth. Then she went on.
"I thought it was a well, chambermaid, or whatever you call it, asking if I wanted towels or something. And I got up and opened the door and, well, it was Nate. My, well, not my boyfriend exactly, but in college we had been close to it. We might have been boyfriend and girlfriend. Might have fallen in love and gotten married. I don't know. But he was, well, he was killed by a drunk driver in the middle of our sophomore year at the U. He looked the same. 20-something years old. He was just like I remembered him. Except for more real. Because he had a little mole beside his eye that I had, well, forgotten about in all the years since. Hard to believe. It's been over 20 years. But there he was, all the same. He spoke to me, asked to come in, and told me I still looked the same, too.
As she recounted her experience, the lady started to cry. Silently, not sniffling or anything. Just tears running down her cheeks as she talked. The video had Judson's complete attention now.
It wasn't scary, or even weird. Just nice. We talked for an hour, about my life, about my ex-husband. Well, about how much we loved that Spandau Ballet song, and how it was playing the one time we kissed.
Midwest Traveler laughed then, still crying.
He told me, no, True was playing when we held hands at the bonfire after the football game. Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper was the song playing when we kissed. The one time we kissed.
Now she smiled and looked at the camera, just for a second.
I'm not young anymore, I know. And I've gained a lot of weight. But for a couple of hours last July, in that bed and breakfast, I was a young woman again.
She looked past the camera, rubbing the tears from under her eyes. Her emotion was practically making her glow.
I dozed off. I don't know why. And when I woke up, it was, well, 2 in the morning or so, and he was gone. The door was locked from the inside, but Nate was gone. Oh, Nate. Nate Stevenson was his name. I went down to the lobby and the girl there smiled and asked how my night was. And she smiled, well, like she knew. So I told her I had the most strange, wonderful experience. And, well, the girl said to me, we all did. That's the thing. Every year on the 3rd, that happens. And I said, what? Well, what happens? And she said, a loved one or a friend or an acquaintance comes to the door. Well, I wouldn't have believed it if it hadn't happened to me. But she said that it was always the same, every year, and that the girl from Dawson's Creek had come and seen her man, the one who died, and started to tell me what had happened to her the night before, which was not as exciting as my Nate or a movie star, but was a, well, ghost, nonetheless. And then she told me not to tell anybody about it, to just keep it to myself, that they didn't want word to get out and the place to be, well, exploited, you know. But I just had to say something. And I've got this Skype camera on my Mac, so there you are. That's the story. I swear it's all true, and, well, it's the most wonderful thing that's happened to me.
The woman, who was no longer crying, but beaming now, leaned over and fumbled with the computer for a moment before the image went out. That was it. Judson sat there for a few seconds, pondering. But the video auto-played to another one, this one about angels, and not by a Midwest traveler. And he went back to the one he'd just watched. Right under the video box, there were now 120 likes, 7 dislikes, and 6 user comments. Besides the 2 Judson had read, one of them called the woman crazy, 2 of them called her a liar, along with profanity, a rude comment about her weight, and 3 misspellings, and one said, "I would love to go there, see my gran again. Where is Idaho?" Judson Cavella had watched the video through twice, and then forwarded on to Donovan, the webmaster at True Ghost Encounters, the website that credited him as staff writer, which he supposed was better than freelancer. He explained that he'd gotten the YouTube link in an email from a fan, user Housekeeper Atreides, who had sent him links in the past. The first time he'd watched it, Judson had rolled his eyes at the woman's setup, how awkward she was, and couldn't help but start counting the wells. But then, she'd gotten awfully specific about her experience. And it wasn't just a light or a shadow or even a voice she had witnessed, but something else, something much more profound. And her tears had been real when she cried. Not melodramatically, but the way you cry when you're very tired, tears coming unbidden, or when you're recounting something sad from your past that affects you in the background of what you're trying to communicate. Judson was surprised that he had started to believe Midwest Traveler, who didn't give her name, but had another video posted from a year before in which she referred to herself as Aunt Gretchen, where she talked about having female self-respect when you don't have any children, and rewatched the video a few minutes later, this time fully believing her. There was something compelling about her ordinariness. He did a Google search on bed and breakfasts in Vernon, Idaho, and got no results. He did a map search of the town, and indeed, there was a locust lane that went alongside the woods and ended near a tiny lake that appeared to be the size of a parking lot. He did a phone search, but also got no results for a bed and breakfast. Judson sent the woman a PM, private message, asking if she would tell him more about the place she had stayed, adding that he was both moved and intrigued by her story. Was she able to touch her lover? Was he aware he had died? Did she have any physical evidence? What had the man been wearing? What was the story the desk clerk told? He asked her to get back to him as soon as she could, and thanked her in advance. Then he wrote up a little article about the YouTube clip for TGE, and ended it with, "Of course, one has to be skeptical. Such an amazing story, such an amazing place, would be as famous as the Queen Mary, Hearst Castle, maybe even Stonehenge. But imagine if it were true. A place where, once every 365 days, ghosts come calling. And not just random ethereal entities, but personalities of people from our own lives. Tourists would travel from all over the world to go there. Pilgrims would give up all they have to experience this. The veil between life and death would be forever drawn asunder, with a predictable, quantifiable phenomenon such as this. If this story be true, I do not exaggerate in proclaiming it the 8th wonder of the world." He spell-checked and proofread his article, then embedded Aunt Gretchen's recounting partway down and hit publish. Normally, he'd submit the story to Ned Donovan, the webmaster. But this one was just too captivating, with the kind of story that everyone would have an opinion about. Was this Midwest traveler / Aunt Gretchen an actress? If so, had anyone seen her in anything before? Did you believe her story? If so, what convinced you? If not, why? Would you go there, knowing you'd encounter a ghost? If so, who would you like to meet? Judson had to go to work at the library at 4. He worked at the reference desk, and there was seldom anything to do but read and surf the net, and there was nothing he hated more than when library patrons came up to him to ask about books or magazines. His shift was uneventful, but when he got back home, There were 11 new messages in his True Ghost Encounters email account. He read through them, happy for the hits. The first handful were from people who had been moved by the clip and wanted to share their own theories. One was a disbeliever, who nevertheless agreed with him that if this place were real, everyone in America, if not the world, would know about it. Then Judson had a message that the clip he had embedded in his article was to a broken link. The next email also said so. He opened up the TGE website and saw his was the most recent article. It had a link to File Not Found in the middle of it. He hit refresh, but the Gretchen clip did not reappear. He went to YouTube directly, but it appeared the woman's video had been removed. He did a search for her and found one clip, the self-worth testimonial from the year before. Nothing else. Judson frowned. This wasn't good. Often articles got removed from YouTube because the administrators didn't approve of them, because there had been complaints from offended persons or copyright holders, or because the users themselves had removed them. This appeared to be the latter, but it was hard to tell. Judson wished he had saved a copy of the woman's testimony, but he couldn't have known it would disappear so quickly. He scanned the rest of the emails. Second to last was a plea. "A sincere request," read the subject line. It was from a Ms. Constance Bice. It was... She was proprietor of the Noble Oak Bed and Breakfast in Vernon, Idaho. She was asking him if he would please remove his article from the website. The owners of Noble Oak prided themselves in their privacy, and it was imperative that the location, and more importantly, the special qualities of their establishment, remain a secret. She hoped he would understand, and if he would kindly acquiesce to her request, she would comp him a room and free meals, for him and a significant other, on any day of the year, including holidays. Now, Judson's first impulse was to become angry at this attempt at censorship, but this woman's request made him even more intrigued, more likely to believe in the building's special nature. It was February 19th, just over 4 months until the 4th of July weekend. He could remove the story, let them have their little secret, if in return he could have an actual brush with the supernatural, a real true ghost encounter. The last email in his inbox was letting him know that ghosts weren't real, and that the link in his poorly written article was broken. Judson changed the post's status to private, which meant only registered users who subscribed to his work could read it. He still got a couple of emails about it in the next few minutes, from followers of the website that had read the article. He fired off his own email to Constance Bice, asking her for some information, and included his telephone number. Less than an hour later, his cell rang, and an older lady was on the other end.
"Mr. Kilveda?"
"Covella, yes."
"I contacted you about the article you wrote, about my bed and breakfast."
"Is it true?"
"Is what true?"
she asked. He was tempted to be very sarcastic in his response, but squelched that instinct. As a journalist, sarcasm was as useful as a juggler with Parkinson's.
"It's haunted. Like, for real?"
"For real. Although I'm not sure what we have here is considered an actual haunting. It's more like a reliable psychic phenomenon."
"Nice. Reliable, like Old Faithful."
She made an unamused sound.
"Not everyone's experience is going to be the same. Some visitations have been quite ordinary. One or two have been truly terrifying. Some people leave forever changed by what went on here."
Sure, sure, he could understand that. to actually speak with a ghost, how could it not cause a huge paradigm shift? But you've seen them yourself. The ghosts.
Of course. Every year I make it a point to stay and answer the door when the time comes.
And?
And? What can I tell you, Mr. Cavelda? Once it was my grandmother at the door, once my childhood best friend, only looking much better than when the cancer took her several years ago.
Last year?
Last year, well, that was a bit unusual.
Funny you could use that word in a situation where none of it could be considered usual.
2 years back, a woman stayed at the place with suicide in her heart. Whoever came to her door that night, he didn't manage to sway her, and we found her in the bathtub the next morning. And she came to my door last July. We spoke little, but...
She broke off.
Sir.
Yes, go on.
None of this is going to end up on your internet site, is it?
Her voice was stern, overflowing with judgment. No, ma'am, I promise.
You remember that you promised. There are only 11 rooms here at Noble Oak. If there were the kind of hysterical publicity that your articles drum up, well, there would be no room or opportunity for a better experience than last year's. You understand?
Well, I would think you'd want as much publicity as possible. Who knows, maybe you could add on, build another 5 floors with the...
No,
she said solidly, like telling a child to put the toy back on the shelf.
The phenomenon here is a personal one, a private one. I ask every guest to keep it as quiet as they can. It's how we've managed to contain things these many years.
How long have you been in business?
Are you interviewing me, Mr. Cavelda?
No, not at all. And call me Judson. He hoped she could hear his disarming smile over the phone. It's just so fascinating to me. I hope you can understand.
Oh, I understand, of course. But if the word got out, and thrill-seekers and debunkers flocked here, or worse, religious fanatics who would want it all shut down or destroyed, well, we would not stay in business, not in the way we have for over 50 years.
And for 50 years, ghosts come every July 2nd?
For well over 50 years, Mr. Judson, before my father built the place. But I must cut our conversation short. I enjoy speaking to guests about their experiences and sharing my own, but not on the phone, not when it could be used against me. You understand?
Yeah, but if...
Come here, if you like. But I ask you, most sincerely, take your internet story down immediately. Do not repeat it to anyone, even if they ask. In return, you will have a most singular experience.
I will, ma'am, he said, and he meant it. Less than a half an hour later, the story was gone from the site, completely removed, and he went as far as to tell Donovan the webmaster that it had all been a hoax. He assumed, if there was even half truth to the story, that it would be worth it. Over the next weeks, he did send a trio of messages to the woman Midwest Traveler, whose YouTube video had gotten this whole ball rolling. One asking if she, too, had been asked to remove the clip, one asking if she'd sit down with him to talk about it, and one talking about his invitation to come stay in Idaho, and whether she thought that was a good idea. He wanted to ask her how her whole mindset about life and her attitude about death had changed since her experience with the dead, almost boyfriend. But he would never find out.
The parking lot of the bed and breakfast was already full when Judson got there. It was a small two-story building with something old-fashioned and pseudo-southern about it. Mostly it was white, though it had a touch of gray here and there, like the song. There were some small mobile homes around back, and Judson parked in front of one of those. A Hispanic woman stuck her head out the door of one and cocked her head in question. "Can I park here?" he asked.
"You stay at hotel?"
she asked loudly. "The bed and breakfast?" "Yes."
"Okay, no problema."
And she disappeared inside again. There was a hefty older gentleman at the check-in desk ahead of him. He had a hoity-toity British accent and called the red-headed clerk, "My good lady." The clerk, a bespectacled 20-something, looked up at Judson when it was his turn. She was pretty, in her way, but she had burn scars going down her chin and neck, and when she handed him his key, he saw more scars on her right hand.
"Unfortunately, all the rooms are taken," the clerk told him.
Her name was Michelle, according to the tag she wore on a lanyard around her neck. Probably a typo.
"But Ms. Bice has you set up in one of the staff rooms."
"Staff rooms?"
"Yes. They were used by employees here until recently. Now all of us stay in the shacks out back."
By her tone, he knew how thrilled she was by that development. "The staff room?" Judson asked, then leaned in closer to her. "Does it still have the unique qualities the other rooms have?"
"Unique qualities," repeated Michelle. "That sounds like Ms. Bice. Yes, it's just as haunted as Murder Room 12.
Judson wanted to inquire about that, but there was another guest behind him in the line, a handsome, muscular black man who looked like an athlete. So he thanked the woman and stepped away from the desk. There was a cozy little parlor before him with a number of couches and a handful of guests mingling there. One of them, a motherly type with 50s cat glasses, was animatedly addressing the others.
"So nice to be able to talk about this with someone. Believe me, I was here 2 years back, and only my daughter and husband heard my story, and I don't know if either of them believe me."
"Did they come here with you today?" asked an old man, dressed in a suit.
"No, no. I wouldn't let them ruin this for me."
From overheard lobby conversation, it turned out the B&B was expanding. A couple of small mobile homes had been put out back for the employees to stay in, reportedly much nicer than shacks, so they could let out more rooms. The wall paneling and carpet was all new, and some of the rooms had newly installed air conditioners and modern-ish light fixtures. The scuttlebutt was an old man who stayed there a year or two back and ostensibly had a pleasant experience, and recently died, had left the place some money in his will. Not enough to double its size, but easily enough to add on a couple more rooms and accommodate the employees out back, put in a hot tub or two, maybe. Judson wondered if Noble Oak had made their deceased benefactor an honorary ghost, or if that was just understood. When he posed the question, he got only polite chuckles, as though he was a child making an inappropriate comment in church. A young couple, barely out of their teens, came in and sat down among them. They squeezed unnecessarily close to one another, like there was hardly any room on their sofa. The wife was showing off her wedding ring to a lady in a wheelchair, who pretended to be very impressed with it.
"So, who are you hoping to see tonight?"
asked the wheelchair woman.
"Tonight?"
asked the bride. "Hopefully nobody," the groom said, "if you know what I mean." Then they giggled. The motherly woman turned her attention toward them.
"You mean you don't know?"
she asked, aghast. "Know what?"
"We thought you were here because of the internet,"
the woman said. The well-dressed gentleman spoke up.
"Yes, some idiot spilled the beans about this place, and now they're actually having to turn people away."
"We're here on our honeymoon,"
said the bride, raising her ring finger toward the men, who merely nodded.
"Spilled the beans about what?" asked the groom.
"Oh, nothing,"
said the motherly type.
"I'm sure you'll have a nice time."
The Brit who had just checked in paused in front of Judson, clearing his throat politely to get his attention.
"Are you familiar with this place, young man?"
"The bed and breakfast? I've never been here before, no."
Then, before the man could ask,
"I know about it, though, if that's what you're asking."
"Ah, heard about it from those damned tattletales, no doubt."
The Brit shook his head.
"They made a go at ruining it for everyone. I nearly didn't fly over this year."
"You flew here? To stay tonight?"
"Yes. I'm not from here, you see,"
the man said, needlessly.
"I'm a writer."
"Really? Me too.
I've had 2 books published, both about Jimi Hendrix, one before the fame and one about the last couple of years of his life. Are you familiar with him?"
"With Hendrix? Sure, a little bit."
"You should look up my books. I'll give you my card."
The Brit thought back fondly.
"I felt I knew Jimmy as well as anyone could know someone they'd never actually met. You follow?"
"Not really, no."
"I'd gotten into his head, talking to his mates, his managers, his bandmates, his family. So I came here, knowing that the dead bloke to come to my door would be good Master Hendrix. You follow?"
"All right. And?"
"And the door knocks, and it's my goddamn grandfather."
The portly man followed it up with a couple of uniquely British curse words. Judson felt a smile growing on his face, and he quickly pushed it away.
"So, this year?"
"This year, it's gonna be Are You Experienced?"
"Am I what?"
"Forget it, nothing."
"Well, let me know how it works out, okay?"
"I may, and I may not, friend. The owner made me swear not to write a word about this. Doubly so when she found out I was a writer."
"Yeah, I imagine I'd get the same speech. But what happens if, say, Freddie Mercury or Paul McCartney come to your door tonight? Will you be disappointed? Still try it again next year?"
"I say, a one-on-one visit with any rock star would be quite top shelf. But McCartney's not dead, you know."
"Oh, right.
I'll tell you what. Seek me out tomorrow around 11. If everything worked out, I'll say to you, let us not talk falsely now, for the hour's getting late."
"Say what again?"
The portly man continued, quite proud of himself.
"And if I didn't, I'll say, there's too much confusion. I can't get no relief."
"Why would you say that? I don't understand."
"No, I suppose you don't. Look, I'll just give you a thumbs up, all right?"
"All right."
They were interrupted by a pair of men who, it turned out, did not have a reservation, but wanted to purchase the room from somebody that did.
"I would think not," the British writer said.
"No, thank you," said Judson.
"We'll make it worth your while," said one of the men. There was something slightly familiar about him. "It's really important."
"Well, yes," said the Brit. "Of course it is."
$1,000? How does that sound?"
"No, do not ask again."
The man addressed Judson.
You want to make a grand?
Are you two ghost hunters or something?" The one with the glasses did a little head wobble.
"We prefer to call ourselves professional debunkers."
"No, then."
"Come on, you don't really think this is going to happen, do you?"
Judson started to answer, but the British writer spoke louder.
"Why in the bloody hell would we be here if we didn't?"
"Yeah,"
Judson added, and he realized that, having never seen a ghost, he had somehow become a true believer.
"I feel sorry for you both," the other debunker said, and they went off to seek somebody else. Judson shook his head with his new writer friend. What did I tell you? The first rule of Ghost Hotel Club is you do not talk about Ghost Hotel Club.
What do you mean, Ghost Hotel Club? The man asked.
Judson picked that as his cue to go find his room, which turned out to be all the way at the end of the first floor hall, behind a plain door marked, believe it or not, with a big white zero.
Room zero, he said, putting the key in the lock. That feels right.
The room was not only small, it was tiny. The girl had said it was a staff room, but he suspected it might have actually been a janitor's closet. Or an employee break cubicle, if they existed in those days. It had awful faded 70s orange carpet and a tiny window by the bed that overlooked a storage shed. But he wasn't here for the view. He got out his laptop and grabbed his Zoom portable microphone. His cell phone rang. It was Claudia, the girl he had invited on his little trip, who had not accompanied him. He considered letting it go to voicemail, but answered on the last ring.
Judson's phone.
Hey,
she said, seemingly breezy, light.
Hey, Claudia.
Seen any ghosts?
He didn't know if she was making fun of him, but he didn't care.
Not yet. But the night is young.
I was thinking about what you said, and I... Well, maybe you were right.
Which part?
That sleeping with you would be a fair price to pay to actually see a real live ghost.
Lovely. That hadn't been his argument at all. What he'd actually said was that, of all the people in the world, he had picked her to share this experience with him, and that that ought to say something. But she had made her feelings clear.
Look, Claudia, Jimi Hendrix just walked by. I gotta go.
Oh, okay. Well, tell me how it...
But he had already hung up. The irony would have been if the phenomenon happened while he was arguing with his not-girlfriend, and he missed the whole damn thing. Just for reassurance, he opened the door and looked up and down the hall. No one was the... Wait. There was an old man at the door way down at the end of the hall. He stood still, waiting at the closed door. He could have been a customer, or he could have been something else.
Are you one of them?
Judson called. The old man did not turn. He did not react in any way. Now, that could have been because he was elderly and hard of hearing, or it could have been that he was not meant for Judson Cavella. Judson swallowed. He considered grabbing his camera. He'd brought a Nikon he'd wasted a week's salary on a couple of years before and never took any pictures with, which was sitting in his bag on the nightstand. But something told him not to. That he would go down tomorrow and see that old guy with his equally old wife and feel like a horse's ass. He checked the other direction, but the hall was empty to his right. What if, though, he had turned and someone obviously dead were standing there, waiting, staring, not living? He realized that he was actually a little afraid. The air was alive with something. Maybe electricity, maybe psychic phenomenon, maybe just his own imagination. But he slowly closed his door and locked it. He racked his brain for people that he would both like to see at the door and would prefer not to see. Mr. Doman, his fourth grade teacher, who had died the day after the last day of school, apparently not looking as forward to summer break as everybody else. And would he be the same as when Judson was a kid? Or how he looked when he died? Or worse, how he looked now, all these years later? What would he talk to an old teacher about? He'd lost two aunts and an uncle. The neighbor lady he'd called Grandma Kinsey. One actual grandmother. A childhood friend who had moved away and died years after that. The sister of his schoolmate who he'd had a crush on when he was 13. The family doctor... a junkie cousin.
He thought about what celebrity he'd most like to meet from beyond the grave, but could only think of Michael Jackson and what that interview might be like. No one had come to the door yet. Maybe he should have talked to that old guy at the end of the hall. The ghost of a stranger was better than no ghost at all. He looked at his phone, checking the time. He hadn't been able to speak to Constance Bice, the owner of the place, yet, and wished he had asked the others in the lobby just how this was supposed to work. Was it at the stroke of midnight? Were you supposed to concentrate on who you wanted to appear? Should he have brought a Ouija board along? Perhaps the fact that he had a recorder handy was keeping the apparitions away. A watched pot never boils and all that. Knock, knock, knock. It was very faint. Maybe it was at someone else's door. Judson was a little disgusted these doors didn't have spy holes in them. But everything was done up to look like the Roaring Twenties, as much as he could tell, so there wasn't much in terms of modern decor, especially not in former janitors' closets. He went to his door. Hello? No one answered. He put his hand on the doorknob and froze there. Once he opened it, things would be forever changed for him. Did he really want to meet a ghost? Did he want to become one of those true believers who interpreted every flash reflection or creaky floorboard as a messenger from the other side? Did he truly want to know? But again, what if it was an employee asking him if he wanted pancakes or breakfast burritos for tomorrow? Or a kid playing a prank? Or Ms. Bice there to forbid him from talking upon pain of torture? Or no one at all? Wasn't that more likely? He turned the knob, opened the door. It was not an employee or kid. Standing before him was Uncle Elliot, who gave him a nod. Elliot James had died in the early 90s, 92 or 93, when Judson had been very young. It had been AIDS that took him, and the last time Judson had seen his uncle, he had had sunken eyes, thinning hair, and weighed about 100 pounds.
Elliot?
May I come in?
Asked the ghost. I began the living person, then swallowed and took a step back, opening the door wide. Elliot came in, and Judson got a sensation of coldness as he passed, like a window left open a crack. But nothing more. Elliot's feet touched the carpet. His body made a shadow on the wall and floor. Judson closed the door and followed his uncle into the room. Elliot looked around.
What is this? A converted closet?
I think it used to belong to the maintenance man or something.
Well, I shouldn't have expected something fabulous. My mistake.
Do you know where you are? How did you get here? Do you recognize me?
So many questions. Yes, I was told not long ago to prepare to come here. You are my nephew Judson, all grown up. Those sideburns, are they in style again?
Sure,
Judson lied, then sat down on the bed.
You want to take a seat?
All right.
The ghost sat down, and the bed moved. It might have been an illusion, but to what end? Uncle Elliot stretched, crossed his legs, and addressed his nephew.
So, how have you been?
Been good. Off and on. I've actually held a job for over a year now.
It won't last. Hope you set aside some money, honey.
Judson snorted. Elliot had called him honey when he was 6 or 7. It had been a while. Then he remembered.
Oh, I wanted to thank you. For college.
College?
Elliot asked. Then nodded.
Oh, journalism school, right?
I wouldn't have been able to go without you.
Judson had gotten a partial scholarship right out of high school, but Elliot had left him a little bit of money, which his mother insisted go toward tuition and books. So, thanks. Didn't do much with it, did you? Your mother wanted you to be a dentist. That's true. But I would have been a lousy one. Elliot nodded. Are you a lousy journalist? For what I make from it, no. Judson realized that he had squandered a great deal of his education, seldom going to class, partying, pursuing girls who had no interest in him, ignoring paper deadlines, and generally doing less than he was capable of. And had Elliot seen all that? But thanks. You're welcome. I had no need of the money, and you'd have been a lousy soldier. That was true. Judson stared at the man for a moment, saying nothing. Elliot hadn't been a handsome man, exactly, with dull brown eyes, pockmarks, and a nose that looked like it had been squashed in the middle. But he looked better now. His skin seemed clear, the nose becoming. Of course, it had been so long, Judson couldn't recall if he was remembering wrong. You're dead. What's that like?
It's not much, Judd Sonny. Mostly looking around, thinking, waiting for eternity to end.
Really? What about Grandma? Do you see her?
I have seen her, yes. She never stops talking. I thought she was loud when she was alive.
Judson laughed at that. His grandmother had been a hysterical woman, blowing everything out of proportion, making a big deal out of the slightest incident or comment. But she had had a way of making him feel important, of inflating his every positive attribute and accomplishment. She had been easy to love, for how difficult to love she was. Have you appeared to anyone else?
Me? Once I spoke to your Aunt Rita, to let her know about Theo, that he was all right.
Judson had forgotten about Theo. His cousin had died in Afghanistan, killed by one of those improvised explosives outside a cafe. His mother had mentioned at the funeral that she just knew, the day before she got the news, and that she'd been prepared. Judson hadn't believed her. "So this place is kind of magical, huh?" Judson said, for want of something to say. "Do you ghosts know about it? Like one of those payphones that used to let you make calls for free? Or are there lots of
Judsonny, honey, I've got to go soon. We only have a minute or three to deliver our messages and then get out. Unless it's really important. Or it's one of the dark ones."
Dark what?
Some of the ghosts that come here aren't messengers or loved ones. Sometimes they come across to hurt people. Or worse, if they can manage.
Judson nodded. Evil spirits. The thought made him feel lucky that it was just his uncle, who had been so supportive of him when Judson's folks got divorced, and he'd felt so worthless because his father wasn't anxious to visit. But that reminded him.
Oh, hey, do you mind if I record our conversation? I've got to have...
Yes, I mind. This isn't an interview, you know. If I wanted to spill my secrets to the world, I'd have gone on Letterman.
Letterman's not on anymore, Judson said. He retired.
Irregardless,
the ghost said, almost getting huffy now.
I need to tell you, and you alone, that you are wasting your potential, that you have gifts and talents and some real ability, which you got from my side of the family. You're very welcome. And you seem content to squander it. You need to seek out people who appreciate what you have to offer and dismiss the rest. Life is too short. Big surprise. And when you're a friendly haunt like me, you won't feel like bragging how many new phones you went through.
Judson nodded. He had been pretty proud of his phone, though. Do you have anything you want me to tell Mom? Elliot stood up from the bed.
You keep our little conversation to yourself, little ghost rider.
The more people know about this place, the more likely some little planter's peanut will get it in his addled head to burn it to the ground.
All right. The ghost walked toward the door.
God, you have no idea of your potential. I was dumber than you and came from almost nothing, and I made so much more of myself than you have so far.
He bobbed his head in consideration.
Of course, I can't be too hard on you. You didn't have your sweet Uncle Elliot around to show you the way.
I guess not. Judson pondered, then finally said, Hey, Elliot, I'm sorry I wasn't nicer to you before you died. I was confused. I was a stupid kid. You were a good uncle, and I...
Put it right out of your mind, Judd Sonny. The world was different then. It's better now. Not great, but better.
Still, I'm sorry.
Accepted. Now you go out there and see if you can't make the world a little better still. Okay?
Okay. Elliot pointed to the door. Maybe he couldn't open it himself, but Judson opened it for him, not anxious for their meeting to end, but conscious that it had to. Elliot paused in the doorway.
Look, don't come here again. Next time it won't be me. Might be someone bad. Might be Art Clokey, but don't count on it.
Art Clokey? The name was familiar, but it reminded Judson of Claymation for some reason.
Don't come back here. Don't tell anybody else.
What? How can I keep something like this a secret? I mean, that's totally...
All right. One person. You can tell one person,
Elliot told him. He stepped through the door.
But no blondes, okay?
Judson spluttered, but he didn't know if it was a joke or not. His uncle was in the hall, then he wasn't. The hallway was empty in both directions. Slowly, he closed the door. He was alone again, naturally. Still, he felt exhilarated, anxious, and foolish for all the things he didn't ask. Why didn't he ask about the purpose of life, about what to expect after death, about why this place had the supernatural qualities it did? Maybe his uncle wouldn't have answered those questions. Maybe he couldn't answer. All Judson knew was, things would be different now. How could he write up people's real ghost encounters now that he had had one himself? And how could he not write about his own? He'd muddle through, he supposed. The end.
And there you go.
I still don't know where Dead and Breakfast is going to go. If you would like to participate, let me know, and we'll figure something out. It just occurred to me a second ago that what if somebody wanted to write a story from the point of view of a ghost who looks forward to this day every year? Or, like I said, you could do an inspiring story, you know, where someone is comforted by a visit from somebody in the afterlife, and I don't know. See, just if it's me writing these stories, you're going to get certain kinds. And I guess I've sort of delineated my thinking on this. But other people might have completely different ideas. I think that's the neat thing about a collaboration like this, a process like this, where you could get people that feel different things or fear different things, find different things amusing, and, you know, you find somebody who's more talented than I am in writing. I was going to say about ghosts or about romance or about relationships or about death, but I could just have cut it off and said, you find somebody who's more talented at writing than me. And that would be very interesting. Like I said, the idea still intrigues me of putting together a collection of these kinds of stories. It didn't happen through the Doonstief. And it's not like that's one of my great regrets, but
you know, Big Anklevich moved away, and one of my big regrets is that we had a, let's say, a play date every single week. And sometimes we missed it, yeah, here and there. But we had something to look forward to where we would get together and we would talk and we would eat and we would either podcast or write or think about writing every week. And now that that's gone, it's a huge bummer. And I still, sometimes I'll go to the thrift store and I'll see a book and I'll be like, ah, Big is probably after that book. I'll call, oh wait, there's no point in calling him because then I'd have to mail that book to him. Not, never mind, kind of thing. And I really miss the days of us getting together and just, I guess I took it for granted because we did it almost every single week for years. But now that it's gone, it's a shame. Because right there at the very end, we started getting together and encouraging the other to write. Hey, let's write for a half hour and then we'll, you know, go get something to eat or whatever. And that was really cool. There was a library there in the town where we would always meet. And we tried on more than one occasion to use one of their study rooms for our podcast or for recording or for writing, and they wouldn't let us. They let us go into it once, and then they gave us all these reasons that we couldn't do it. And it really frustrated me because it's like, no one is using that room, but you won't let us use it? And the library here in my town, they sent an email to everybody with a library card, I assume, saying that there are media rooms now that they have built where you can record or video or go in and, you know, sing your song or whatever. And all you have to do is just write down your name that you want it and for how long. And there are several. And I just thought, dang, where were these when Big and I were getting together? It would have been really cool if just like once a month we're going to go in there and we're going to record, or maybe every week we're going to go there and sit down for a half an hour and write just in silence. And then we'll go eat, or then we'll podcast, or then we'll whatever things came to mind. It's a shame that that is over, and I don't see it coming back. But like I said, tomorrow he and I are going to call one another and we're going to record another episode. And so that's still good. It's good that we're still in touch. I talk to him all the time, and it's got to annoy him. There have been times when he laughs when he answers the phone. It's like, again, huh? Wow. I think I probably show him way more attention than his wife does. But, you know, out of sight, out of mind. No, the opposite of out of sight, out of mind. But, you know, like I said, when we were getting together all the time, it wasn't nearly as special as it should have been. I don't know what I'm talking about. All I know is that this is the story I chose to share with you, and it's a new year, and a new year is just filled with possibilities. There's going to be bad things. There's going to be times that I stumble. There's going to be setbacks. There's going to be times that I feel sorry for myself. But I hope that there are moments when I am inspired. There are moments when I am excited about an idea. There are moments when I sit down and I write something and I'm proud that I wrote it. I'm proud that it came out of my brain. And I can't wait to share it with someone. And maybe that someone will be you. Thank you. This has been Rish Outfield. Everybody loves chalupas. And thank you for listening. Till next time.
The music in this episode was created by Kevin MacLeod, whose shenanigans can be found over at incompetech.com.
Is this thing on? All right. If you listen carefully, you can hear Rish in the other room. I think he's crying. Look, this show is released under a Creative Commons 3.0 no derivatives license. That's nothing to cry about, really. Okay, maybe one tear. A manly tear. But Rish really needs people to support him on Patreon. I mean, he's a pathetic barrel full of wet ramen noodles. And not the flavored kind, either. The kind you have to put that brown dust on just for it to taste like anything.
What's going on? Fake Sean? Are you talking to the listeners?
Oh, I'm sure they've turned it off by now. You've been crying, boy.
There's this movie, The Blind Side. It's really sad.
Because the big black chap has such a tough life and learns what a real family means.
Well, no, because there's so much talk about football in it. There's a love for football in there that just breaks my heart.
And how did you feel about that part where Sandra Bullock gets it on with that huge child?
No, that never happens.
It's called subtext, your little lavender wildflower.
Okay.
Anyway, support Rish on Patreon. Between you and me, the television was off when I went into the room.
What'd you say?
Nothing.
There was a story that I wrote a few years back called Dying is Easy. And I was so, so proud of this story when I wrote it. I thought it was really, really good that I told Big, you know, I can tell that you've lost interest in the Doonstief, and we've already recorded that last episode, but before that airs, if we could do one last story, I would like to run Dying is Easy as the final episode, the final story episode of the Doonstief. And he's like, oh, why? You don't want to do the Doonstief anymore? I was like, but no, it's you that doesn't want to do the Doonstief anymore. And, you know, his attention rises and falls like the tides. And I think tomorrow we're going to get together, you know, over the phone and do another Doonstief episode, a story episode. So yeah, it hasn't completely died, but like I said, that Dying is Easy story, it was one that I felt like, okay, this represents me. This is a story that's personal, and I think it's really good, and that's what I want to go out on. And I don't even know why I brought that stuff up. Maybe that can be an outtake, because damn, it doesn't have anything to do with today's episode. Thanks.